Hey, road trippers, you have indeed reached Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits in rural Mexico. But before we can take off on this week's road trip, we need to fill up the tank, which is code for pay the bills, which is code for run the commercials for the folks who are enabling us to go on these agave road trips. So sit back and Chava and I will circle back to you in a second.
Hi, I'm Kiki Luya, the Executive Director of Restaurant Workers Community Foundation, and I'm the host of a new podcast called Shift Work. In the last 6 months, some 6,500 restaurants have closed their doors, and there's never been a time when restaurants and their 12 million workers have been more vulnerable. It's time to transform hospitality. With Shift Work, a podcast made in collaboration with RWCF and HRN, we're shifting the conversation about how the restaurant food you love makes its way to the table. What does it really take to make that experience happen? And who are the countless workers responsible? We're talking porters, cleaning crew, prep cooks, servers, baristas, hosts, bartenders, barbacks, managers, sommeliers, and chefs. I'll also introduce you to organizations that are leading industry transformation. We'll discuss mental health, fair pay, racial justice, and how hospitality can change for the better. We need it. Listen to and follow Shift Work on your favorite podcast app.
In the Tuxpan region of Jalisco, like in many regions of Mexico, agave spirits are integrated into the fabric of daily life. They're part of the religion, literally. The spirits, and they're almost always called some form of mezcal locally, even though they are not certified, the spirits are served at every one of the community's many religious fiestas. So when the production of these spirits is at risk, literally, the cultural heritage of the entire community is at risk. And that's what's happening in one community in Tuxpan. Don Arturo is a fifth-generation mezcalero, or palenquero, or tabanero, or really tachiquero, because that's what his family calls their little distillery, a tachica. It was built by Don Arturo's father, who learned the craft from his father, who learned the craft from his father. And add one more father, because Don Arturo is, as I say, fifth generation. So Don Arturo's tachica is a hillside gem, a couple of clay-topped steel pot stills, in-ground fermenters, and an earthen oven overlooking a forested hillside. But that hillside is eroding. The rains from the extreme weather that has been plaguing the region in recent years is literally washing away Don Arturo's little distillery and threatening to take with it the community's cultural heritage. With the financial support we're receiving from 818 Tequila, Sacred is rebuilding Don Arturo's family tachica. Or really what we're doing is we're fortifying it so as not to interrupt that heritage. We're rebuilding and reinforcing the hillside that has been eroded, creating a retaining wall that will secure the location. Above that, to serve as a buffer for the weakest part of the earth, we're building a modest tasting room where the locals can sit and enjoy the view of that forested hillside when they come to purchase Don Arturo's Vino de Mezcal. And we're building a structure around Don Arturo's earthen oven so that his tapatas are no more at the whim of the changing weather patterns than his rebuilt tachica will be. This effort to preserve Don Arturo's family business and the cultural heritage of this community in Southern Jalisco is only possible because of a grant Sacred received from 818 Tequila. To learn more about this and the other projects 818 Tequila is funding, please visit us at sacred.mx. That's sacred.mx. The earth is home to all of us, and we're honored to have been selected by 818 Tequila as their partner in making it a more welcoming home. I am Lou Bank.
I am Chava Periván.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico.
And rural other places, too. And I think that's what the episode is going to be about today.
Rural places. Are we talking about Detroit again?
No. Like, do we have an interest in talking about Ecuador, Guatemala, Honduras? We have not only the interest to talk about Mexico, I believe.
Oh, wait. what are we talking about this episode? You've confused me.
No. I think this is a perfect way to start. Confusing you, it's always a great place to start an episode.
And it's not a hard place to get to.
No, it's easy. But today we're talking about something that actually should be in the name of our show. I think it's a big problem we have about the name of Agave Road Trip, which should be Agave and Sotol Road Trip.
Oh, well, okay, sort of, kind of, yes. I mean, I don't think we've done a single episode on Sotol.
Cilirio, no. So I think the first thing to explain is, and this is very confusing, and it's very related to the fact that in some places they call mezcal agave. So the plant, the agave, sure. In some places of Mexico, they call it mezcal. And then
it's funny, there's a little grocery store just a few blocks from me here in Chicago. And one day I went in there, this is years ago now, but one day I went in there and they had in the veggie and fruit section, these little, the same kind of packages you buy raw meat in, you know, that same kind of little styrofoam with the plastic wrap around it, except that it was cooked agave and it was labeled mezcal.
There you go.
I'm looking, I'm thinking, well, this, I can't drink this, but hey, I'm going to buy it.
Exactly. So in some places, mezcal is a plant, and I think this explains the confusion when sometimes people talk about sotol, they are talking sometimes about the drink and sometimes about the plant.
Yeah, have you ever heard it called anything else in Mexico?
Cucharilla.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, fair enough. So, cucharilla, but that's only if you're in Oaxaca?
Correct.
Maybe Puebla?
Oaxaca.
Oaxaca, okay.
Yeah,
but my point is just simply like, how often do they call it? And even there, they refer to it as an agave.
I haven't had that conversation.
Oh, I have.
I had a little bit of that conversation, but they do know the distinction. They know that they are like a... So, okay, even before we try to discuss how do people perceive this, which actually, I don't even know what we're talking about that because we're not those people. No. We have to explain scientifically what is the difference, or not scientifically, but just like in terms of facts, what is the difference between agave and sotol?
Well, if we're talking facts, then you're the one who's doing the talking.
So the way that somebody explained this to me, which I think is what makes the most sense, is that, you know, that a dog is not the same as a wolf.
Well, kind of. I mean, they're related.
Exactly, but they're not the same species at all. They are not the same family. They're different families. And there's actually a very, I hate this, and I have to claim that the botanical part is my weakest part in the whole mezcal context. But you know how when you are categorizing plants, you have the genus, the family, then all these different.
Yeah.
So sotol and agave get to a certain point. And I think we should definitely should have Wikipedia in front of us when we're saying this. But
let the listeners pull up Wikipedia.
We're going to give you that homework. And sotol and agave are very closely related until it gets to a certain moment of specificity. And then they become different things.
But they're both succulents.
Yes, correct. They share that, for example. I think it's the level under succulents where they start sharing, where they become different things.
Yeah. You know, the thing I find most interesting in terms of the differences between the two is agave, like if it's going to seed, it's burning up all of the energy that you'd want to use to convert into fermentable sugars to make booze, right? Yep. So if it's going to seed, if it's having them babies, then forget about it. You can't use it for the booze. On the other hand, with Sotol, it has babies. It can have babies a few times before you harvest it. And to make booze out of it, which is, you know, for people who talk about, oh, I want to save the agave. We need to be sustainable. It's like, okay, then start making sotol.
It comes with a few challenges that we're going to talk about later. But yes, that is correct. The sotol can have many quiotes within its lifetime and still be usable for making alcohol.
Fascinating. Okay, yeah. So what else?
So there... Real interesting thing about sotol is that you can process it exactly the same as you process agave. You're gonna
exactly the same.
I'm sure
cook it underground, steam it above ground, use an autoclave. You can use a diffuser. Is anyone using a diffuser to make sotol?
I wouldn't believe so, but yeah, it's just yeah. But So the tradition of sotol making and agave spirits making, it's tremendously similar. And sometimes I've even seen in places in the north where there's like a few sotoles inside the cooking pit where they're cooking agave. You know, they found a few.
Oh,
they
doing a little ensemble, making a mezcal, if you will.
Yes, by by accident or not, you know, they were in the mountain, they found a few sotoles. But the sotol does have a few challenges. And, you know, it's funny for me because as much as we talk about it, I think in the more specialized agave spirits world, I don't have a lot of data about its production. I know a few things, but I don't know the specific numbers about it. I know that it tends to have less Brix count, less sugars than most agaves. So you're going to get less alcohol out of a certain amount of kilograms of sotol.
Yeah.
And I know too that it tends to be challenging to ferment. So a few of the people that I've interviewed that do sotol, they add tertiary things. I've heard about they add grass, some types of grasses.
Really?
To some types of barks into the fermentation tank to aid fermentation. But again, like I've never, have you ever been to a production site where they're making sotol when you were there?
You know, I think I have. And what, the reason I say it that way is I think I've been at Gilberto's when he was making sotol.
Well, that's where I saw the few cheeky sotoles around in the Gilberto Roldán happens to be in Durango. He produces
Nombre de Dios,
and he produces for so many brands these days. He's like the rock star over there. And but yeah, like I've never been for a long time at a Palenque Vinata, or you call it, where they're just making sotol. So it's hard for me to even be able to be very sure to say that it's extremely similar to how they produce agave. I wouldn't know the specific tiny distinctions that you have to do in the production.
Sure. Okay, so that's what we're talking about?
Well, sort of, kind of. First, I think sotol, it's a wonderful thing. I think we're going to come back to it in different episodes, trying to get more specific about it. We might go visit some producers to get to answer a lot of the questions that I have about it. But I think right now, because we are a very trend-oriented podcast. Is that how you say it in English?
Yes, you're talking about the way that I dress now, how trendily I dress.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm talking more about like we react to what's happening out there in the mezcal world. It seems that right now, sotol is in the middle of a funny controversy. And the controversy in a way is related to the fact that sotol is a very common sight in the south of the United States, correct?
Yeah. Well, so you can find sotol in a number of states, but predominantly in Texas. And
Arizona.
And Arizona, that's correct, yeah. As a consequence, you've got some brands that are popping up now who are producing sotol on this side, the USA side, of the border. And sotol, there's a DO within Mexico, a denomination of origin, in Mexico, but it's not recognized by the USA.
It's not recognized by the USA?
No, not at all.
Oh.
Not at all. Yeah, like, so the USA doesn't buy into the whole denominations of origin thing. Instead, it has individual treaties with different countries. And so, in essence, it says, hey, Mexico, I'll tell you what, you guys respect our thing called bourbon. So you can't, nothing in your, made in your country can be called bourbon, because they used to make bourbon in Mexico. Nothing in your country can be called bourbon. And then we're going to recognize mezcal and tequila. Mm. And, you know, and I'm not saying that that's literally the exchange, but in essence, that's what happens is, you know, we agree to this in the USA, you agree to that in Mexico or in France or wherever we're having the conversation. And so, yeah, I don't, it's funny. I don't know if we've never had the conversation about sotol. I don't know if we were just like, nah, well, we don't care about that. You can't, you know, we're not going to trade you anything for that.
Yeah, because it's so tiny too. It's so ridiculously tiny,
it might be no politician has it on their radar. I don't know what the truth is, but you know, but what we do know is, there are people in Texas who are making and marketing Sotol legally here. And, you know, and one piece of that, you know, there's some, as you can imagine, there's some outrage both in Texas and in Mexico over this practice. And one piece of that is people screaming, hey, there's this this whole tradition and you need to respect our DO. And then on this side, that's in, you know, in Mexico and here in the USA, but then on the USA side, if they want to use, if these brands want to use Sotol as the sugar source to make their spirit, what else can they call it? You have to label it something. The TTB, the Tax Bureau of the USA says you've got to label where the sugars come from. In this case, it's Sotol, so you have to put Sotol on your label.
Can you just name it Dasylirion? Like, can you just use the scientific name? I know that's a very sexy name for and very easy to remember for marketing.
Dasylirion spirits. You know, it's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but what I do know is people use the word Sotol and have used the word Sotol in Texas for a long time. So, of course, they've also used the phrase desert spoon. So maybe, you know, it's an interesting question, but I'll tell you my takeaway from this, and you know, this is going to catch hell with a couple of friends of mine, but I'm used to catching hell these days.
Yeah. Controversial Lou, watch out. Okay,
oh,
here.
That's me. Yeah. But, you know, like, people are outraged and saying you need to respect the denomination of origin and some of the exact, and they're saying this to the Texas brands. And, you know, the two Texas brands that I'm thinking of, right, one of them is being incredibly respectful and is actually working with people who are in the Sotol world to develop their brand and to literally make their Sotol. And the other brand is just like, screw it, we're going to do what we want. But so the outrage that I'm hearing from some people is respect the denomination of origin. You need to respect it. And those are the exact same people who yell at me when I refuse to use the word mezcal for spirits that are not agave spirits that are not certified as mezcal. Like, I'm actually respecting that denomination of origin in some ways. And yet I catch hell from those exact same people for doing so.
Well, I think that actually and that's funny because I don't know anybody in the context that is a great fan of denominations of origin. I think that most of the kids that I know in this context would always say that the DOs are not definitely strengthening the traditional practices that make these spirits a beautiful thing to behold. So
right. And obviously I'd agree with you. And obviously there are brands who would say that we're out of our minds and we don't understand. And you know what? To be fair, they may be right.
So, you know, when I was a teenager, I was very much into ska. And actually, my favorite ska group is playing in Mexico City in a few months. And I've been...
Who's that?
Escape. There's some Spaniard kids. Really, really cool kids. And if we couldn't get into copyright problems, I would love to feature the song that I'm going to mention here. I think people are going to think a lot less of me if they were to know, like, now that they know that I like Escape. But anyway, I was 14 years old, so whatevers. And they have this...
Where the hell are you going with this?
Well, they had this song and... where they are trying to explain that radical nationalisms have never given us anything that is very pretty. You know, like if you think of any radical nationalism, it has given us groups of people that have not been very fortunate when you read history. So they suggest like any multinational effort, any effort that tries to bring two countries together to acknowledge that they're more similar than what they thought and that they had more traditions in common and that their people might like similar things and are in a way melting the borders between them through very simple gestures as just, we happen to share traditions. We happen to like the same flavors. We happen to like the same booze. Might be politically extremely relevant more in the days that we're living. So,
Well, and as I think we've said many, many times about mezcal, the denomination of origin for mezcal, it's hard for me to imagine that this DO for Sotol, it's really hard for me to imagine that it's easy for the smallest producers, the ones who are carrying on the multi-generational wisdom, it's hard for me to imagine that they're part of it, that they are easily accessing that the right to use that word and to market under that word.
And that they have representation in the organism that is going to be in charge of, yeah. of saying like, yeah, you qualify as a tool and you don't qualify as a tool, right?
So yeah. So from that standpoint, you know, having some gringos appear on this side of the border, some Yankees, having them participate in something called SOTAL, to me, in a way, strengthens the ability of these small producers who maybe can't afford to or don't have any idea how to or maybe don't qualify for the NOM to access that word SOTAL, that in a way, maybe it protects them. And again, this is sheer speculation on my point, because we don't travel in that circle.
And even if you don't consider that, I just believe that, you know, there's a handful of humans that are very active on social media that know what SOTAL is. But if I talk to 98% of the kids that I know that are not obsessed with spirits, I tell them about SOTAL, it's not something that it's in their imaginations. It's not something that they can recognize as a name. And I think that for something that it's these days so tiny, it will really benefit if there's more efforts from different directions trying to make it prominent. And if this is something, again, like for me, the most important part of this is this might be a beautiful exercise of saying the US and Mexico, we share so many things in common. And yeah, there's a political border between us, but there's so many traditions, there's so many botanical aspects to our both territories that makes us similar, and that makes us like that we get to be humanized by sharing these things. And I think when you humanize the person above or under the border, you are less likely to do horrible things to them.
Yes, and yet some of the exchanges we're reading online suggest to me that they want to do horrible things to each other on either side of the border.
Well, like, you know what? And we need to wrap this up. And I think that this is what I called mezcal teenagehood. I remember when I jumped into mezcal at the beginning, and a big part of my discourse was protect.
And crystal meth.
Hey, no.
Sorry. Yeah. Part of your discourse was to protect
the purity and the absolute untouched tradition that mezcal represented. And the more I visit places, the more I drink stuff, the more I understand what a lot of these artisans want for the future, it is very clear for me that it has nothing to do with the purity of it. It has to do with its capacity to be transformed in the future, to keep enriching itself, to reach other communities, other places, other countries, and to have relevance in those places that had never thought about this. And I think that if you take it and put it in a crystal box and leave it untouched, you are losing so much. You are losing the capacity for this spirit to evolve into something that we don't quite know what it is right now, but I think could be really beautiful.
Huh. Okay, well, that sounds like a good stopping point, John.
Okay. Anyway, Señor Lu, I think I'm going to drink a little bit of SOTAL after this because it made me thirsty talking so much about the Silirion, and I hope you too.
I sure will. Hasta pronto.
Adios, vato. This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lu Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.